one loudmouth in here. Thank God we got rid of him up where I live. Hi, my name's Jeannie Johnson Theodore Still, and I'm a very grateful alcoholic.
Hi.
Well, there's not too many people here tonight, just some of the old diehards that were here last Thursday night. I'm so sorry you missed a wonderful evening. We had new dancing girls, and you see, when you miss a meeting, that's what always happens. You miss out on all the goodies. And I thought I was only going to do one night, so I was shoving it in hard and fast. And it's highly possible. Oh, you're not going to put cigarette ashes in it this time. Last time I was drinking it out of the can, and there were dirty cigarette butts in it, and I went ahead and drank it. I've drank worse than that in my life. Thank you. We covered last week, for those of you that didn't get here. God, we covered a lot, didn't we, Jimmy? We covered the difference between emotion and feeling. We covered surrender, ego reduction, self-discipline, all these dirty words. We covered a lot of things, and I told a little bit about myself. Now, I think I'm not going to get into that tonight. Suffice to be, if I'm here Thursday night, I shouldn't be unless I'm an alcoholic. Look at me, you can tell I am, you know. You don't get this way for nothing. Bill, I can't get to the drink, dear. There's so much ice in it. If you'd have poured for me, we'd never have been friends. Thank you. So I'm just going to come off the top of my head tonight and see what holes I missed last week for the kids that were here. And then maybe it'll help some of you. Jerry was listening very well last week. I was real pleased to see her back again tonight. Thank you, honey. I was thinking when Bill started it with the Serenity Prayer. I'm going to share just a few little tricks along the line that I use that worked for me, because I'm still here. I'm a survivor. And as you know from my story last week, I was a loser. Even in AA, I did everything wrong. If you told me an easy way to do it, I had to go out and do it some other way. And so I'm going to share some of the things through the years that I have found out from hard experience. That's all I can talk about. Anything after my point, I'm in my 21st year, I can't tell you about. We'll check it out with Aileen. Or we'll get some of the other old boys around here. But when I was listening to the Serenity Prayer, one of the things they told me, and I had to keep it real simple because my head was gone. Everything else was gone, but my head was gone so bad I couldn't remember, you know, whether my body was or not. And how bad I was that all these bloody meetings that always open with a Serenity Prayer. And I couldn't retain the three little lines. Now, I'd been an actress in a fast study, and three lines I couldn't make anymore. Could not remember them. So I had the Serenity Prayer printed on a little card, and I carried it in my pocket. And every time we'd stand up to say the Serenity Prayer, I wouldn't be embarrassed if I could grab that little card out of my pocket and read from it. But all you guys held my hand. So I stood there, and for three solid years I mumbled. But one of the old boys up there in Beverly Hills told me, he says, you know, Gene, I think you, we all say it in a certain other way, but I think maybe you'll do better if you do it this way. And I have through the years, and recently I had a very rough experience, both my husband and I did, with some rather serious things like death and things. And I went back to this, and I was saying it like it's written. And I couldn't get any release from what was going on inside of me. And I was out with one of my babies, and she was keeping me diverted that day. But she stopped, pulled up at a curb, and she said, Gina, I've got to run in here and pick up some photos. I'll be right back out, and then we'll keep talking so, you know, your head won't work. And she went in. When she came out, I was all lit up again. And she said, something happened while I was in there. And I said, yes, you remember, honey, that I was telling you that I've been working with that Serenity Prayer all week long? To get it into action, to get it into my gut. And I said, out here, I started in again when you left me, because here came the imagination again, the false emotions. And all of a sudden, it was just like God talking to me. He says, well, listen, dummy. And he always addresses me as dummy. I don't know why. It's a very affectionate term, the way he says it. But that's how he always addresses me. He never calls me Jean, except when he wants to wake me up in the middle of the night. And that will happen to you. Don't get spooked about it. It does happen. And it was, hey, dummy, why are you saying it differently than you have said it all your life and how you teach other people to say it? And I thought, my God, yes, I have been saying it right. And I was taught to say, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. I've forgotten it. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the thing I can. Leave that S off. The thing I can. And the wisdom to know the difference. You see, I, with my beady little mind, as all of you saw how it worked last week, I am my own worst enemy. And if I leave that S on there, there's going to be things I'm going to decide in great wisdom that I can change. I can't leave any loopholes for this girl. Now, maybe you guys can, but I can't. I got to close the door on all those little escape hatches. And so when I say the serenity prayer, I always remember to leave the S off the second line. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the thing I can, which is always me and what I want, my way, and the wisdom to know the difference. This is a beautiful prayer. The wisdom to know the difference isn't any big deal. The minute I go to work on that second line, the first line and the second line, then there's just no problem with the wisdom. I think I want to touch a little tonight on, not because of Bill's introduction, but I was trying to think of some things that I didn't hit on the last session, and one of the things I want to talk about is the importance of sponsorship. Now, how many of you have sponsors in the room? All right, then let's do it another way. I can't see too good that way. How many don't have sponsors? Why the hell don't you? I mean, you're coming here because you want to stay alive, right? We find in AA that it works much better. We're all loners. We may be very gregarious when we're drinking or something, but we're all loners. Everyone pulls back inside themselves because of the rejection and the ego and all the things I explained last week. And it's very important. That's one of the reasons that AA works so well. One, it's from both sides, by the way. Let's do it from the side of the guy looking for the sponsor. Doesn't much matter who you grab if he's sober. If he's got a little bit of time on the program and you haven't got any, he's obviously going to know more than you do. It's as simple as that. Sponsors aren't tattooed on your head. So if you get one in the first year to help you through the baby things, and you find that after a year you've been around for a while and you're beginning to observe, you're also developing judgment again. And all these things, well, you may wish to get another sponsor. It's not advisable, I don't believe, to keep changing sponsors like we did husbands. But I think it's, I really believe the old saw that when the student's ready, the master will appear. I don't recommend doing it the way I did. Remember, I told you I did everything wrong. I didn't get a sponsor till I was 6 years sober. God, it was lonely. It was tough. It's like learning to play golf and going out and just practicing on your own. You'll develop a lot of bad habits. There's nobody around to tell you, hey, that's not going to work. And finally, in the sixth year, the person that I chose for my sponsor, who will be my sponsor the rest of my life, even though we don't have great contact now, is that's who I nailed then. And the advantage for those of you that are new, because there's a lot of new kids here tonight, or recently new, one, you got to have somebody show you through the path. I mean, God, if you don't, you're going to be getting your feet caught in the damnedest places. And old Johnny Harris has a story that I just love, and I'm going to lay it out here for you because I just love to quote it. He said, he was over at the house one night, he was talking, and he says, you know, Jeannie, isn't it wonderful? Come on in, kids, we still got coffee. He says, isn't it wonderful about the bear? He says, you and I know about the bear. And I looked at him and I said, I don't know what you're talking about, John. What do you mean? He said, well, you know the bear. And I said, well, I know quite a few of them, but I said, I don't really quite know what you're talking about at this particular instance. And he said, well, honey, you know, when our babies come to us, and they're going down the road in their program, and all of a sudden they get to a Y in the road. And they look down here, and oh my God, that looks good, and this one doesn't look so good, and they decide they're going to take off and go down that side. And he says, they come over to tell us all about it, and we tell them, no, I recommend that you take the other branch of the road. And if you are like I was as a baby, the gall rose immediately, don't correct me, don't tell me what to do. But I want to go down that left-hand side of the road. And he said, you and I lovingly say, well, we suggest from experience that you go down the right-hand side. And finally, the baby gets mad and says, well, why can't I go down that other path? And he says, Gene, isn't it wonderful if that's when we tell them about the big black bear down that one? And he says, what's so fabulous is that you and I have the bear marks to prove it. And that's what I was referring to last week when I said, any of you kids have something in the back of your head that you're planning on trying that you think might get you out of here and you can last a little longer, come up and talk to me at the break, because I'm sure I have tried it. There is no doubt in my mind that I have tried it. And I'll let you know if it worked or not. Obviously, it probably didn't, or I wouldn't be here tonight. Now, this thing with the sponsor from the baby's viewpoint is marvelous, because we need somebody we can call. We arrive, we're lonely, we've isolated ourselves, we have no friends. Anybody that knows us is after us, and we're not answering the door to them. And to have someone in the program who is versed in it, who is staying sober and has some ungodly length of time, like 2 or 3 years on the program, that was impossible for me to believe. So I wasn't going to believe 20 and 25. And it gives you a person that you call, you check in with every day for a while, whatever their disposer is, and you check in with them, and you don't have to tell them any hair-raising story. You just say hi, and just call them to see how you are, and tell you I didn't take a drink all night long, and I'm feeling pretty horrible this morning, or whatever it is. And all of a sudden, something starts to happen, a communication starts to go. Now, they're going to be of tremendous value to you down the line, because if they got more time than you have, they know exactly what you're going through. They don't know ahead of themselves, but they know exactly behind them. And the job of a sponsor is someone, many people have this mistaken in AA, it seems like, but my understanding that the job of a sponsor is someone who is walking like they talk. Therefore, we talk less. And that shares their experience and the strength that they have developed through this program and working these steps, and the hope that every one of us needs. Every day, those first few years, you're going to need somebody to shoot you with an injection of hope and to get the mind twisted around and looking, your eyes turned outward. And it's the most wonderful thing, because you see, my concept of sponsorship, I had a sponsor, never judged me, never sat on the other side of a desk, never judged me at all. Now, he may have, but he sure wasn't projecting that. And this was the one person, not the lovers, not the husbands, not the girlfriends, not the anybody else in my life, but this was the one person that I really opened up to and let them see the parts of me that I'd rather die than let anybody see. Happily, I suspected he knew about them, just like Bill got that feeling with me. I could have walked into this man's home at any time, and I have, in the middle of the night, and told him, I have just murdered my husband. And he'd say, oh? A few minutes later, he might say, you feel all right about it? You know? If you don't, we'll discuss what you might want to do about it to change it. But there was never any judgment. That had to come from me. And God, it'll come for us, because we're all so busy judging ourselves. So busy judging ourselves. And it is so wonderful to have someone that you can truly be honest. Now, I'm going to tell you another thing. I don't believe in picking friends for sponsors. Our friends want to be our friends. They want to have fun with us. They want to go bowling. They want to go doing this. They want to do that. They want me, you know, if they're our friends, they probably are operating on the same base level that we are, and they're using you like we're, you know, like you're using them. So friends don't make good sponsors. One reason, or the biggest reason, I think, is that they won't tell us the truth. But a sponsor, the main job of a sponsor is to risk your wrath and fury and bad-mouthing and everything else to deliver the truth about you to you. This doesn't make you very popular with some of your babies, but it will save their lives. And then a little ways down the line, they find out. And then here comes the switch around where they love you. And then this is a different kind of love we're talking about. And I don't know, I was hoping there's a lot of sponsorship going on down here, because you see, it's the greatest thing in the world to have somebody you can walk through this program with. As you progress, you will have more than that, but you'll still have that one special person that knows you intimately. Intimately. You see, we can give a little here and a little there and a little over here and some there, but that's pretty cute of us, because then we can still carry on with our BS. We can still lie to ourselves because we haven't gotten around with anybody in the whole story. I believe very definitely in having one person that knows every single thing about me and is going to love me anyway. And now I've got a lot of people that do. I've got a lot of insurance on this program. A lot of insurance. Now, from the sponsor's viewpoint, all through our book, our big book here, it states, and if you've been reading your 24-hour book all week, ever since last week, it's been talking about the steps. And it's been talking about the fact that there is no way any of us can stay sober if we don't give it away. When all else fails, grab another alcoholic. Now, this doesn't mean grab a new man. Did you read that tonight, our little thing that says what AA is? I was busy, I don't know, daydreaming or something. I wasn't listening. The description of alcoholic, our little format we open with. And it states there, it doesn't say the new alcoholic with only a day on the program. It says the still suffering alcoholic. And while we're going through our growth, you bet your sweet pippy there's going to be days. I told you that last week. The description I've heard of AA to me was the greatest in the world, which I'm quoting, shitty days and fabulous years. Now, you need somebody who is not feeling that way on the day you are to get in touch with, to get in your car and go head and over for. Be selfish about this. And then on the other end of the line, the old toad you're running to needs it, or he's not going to stay alive because he's not giving it. He's gotten his, and he's going to sit there and drive around on his golf cart. Uh-uh. Won't work. This is a sharing experience. We share in here. We are all one. It's a whole bloody family. This is the greatest thing in the way of family I've ever had, and they got really carried away with it up in my group in L.A. They started in calling each other brother and sister, and then auntie and uncle and cousin, and then I came down to the round of ours at some of the New Orleans and Denver convention, and some little tiny old gray-haired lady all wizened up, toddled up to me. She said, "Are you Jeannie?" And I said, "Yes, honey." She's really that wonderful. You're my great-grandmother. And I nearly puked. Now, what she meant was that I had shared my guts, my insides, my black parts with a baby. So she was able to share hers with me. And then she had turned around and shared hers with another baby. And then that baby had shared hers with this little old gal. You see, it's like dropping a pebble in the water. Have you ever watched the ripples as they go out? Now, we got a clock here, Bill? How long do I speak to? Yeah, but that doesn't mean a thing to me. I can't balance my checkbook either. Thank you. I got about 10 minutes more? Thank you, darling. Oh, this is beautiful.
Put it down, Jane.
Put it down. It is. Now, Elaine, I don't know. You had to sit through my story one gruesome day down here. I thought you'd remember. I never stole material things. Never. Oh, now you got it. No, I never stole material things. You might catch me and I'd get punished for it. But I would promote you guys to steal what I wanted and then I'd take it. I think that's just as bad, receiver of stolen goods. Also, when it came to inventory time, I think I can see which hand it is. I think this one's over here and that one's there. No, that's one of the things when it came to the inventory, you know, about stealing and thinking about that. I thought, God, I never stole anything. I seemed to have a concept that, you know, I guess I'd gotten drilled into my head as a kid. You know, if you're going to be called a thief for a nickel, I think that's the way my dad approached me. And if you're going to be called a thief for taking a nickel out of your mother's purse, you might as well go embezzle $400,000 or $500,000 so you can get someplace on it, you know, buy a yacht and do something. So why have the name without having the action? And that appealed to my ego, so I just never stole. But when I got here and I realized that, no, just like the anger that we were talking about last week, oh yes, we all have it, and we just cover it up, and some of us don't let it out for a while, I also had the thievery, because I had stolen things from people that could not be written by, couldn't be taken care of by me working and paying it off every week. I had stolen their love. No concept of what to do with it when I got it, and certainly no capacity to give it back. I had stolen their trust, their loyalty, their time. I had stolen things that there's no way I can ever pay back. I'm willing to if I ever can. But the only way I can do some of these things is just like some of the amends that I have to make to some of the previous husbands. There's no way I can get hold of them. And I have wanted to so much, and I prayed about it. And all I can do is live my life today as God wanted me to then and as he wants me to today. And by that, make up for it. I have truly forgiven myself for the things I've done. How'd I get off on that? I don't know. Take me back a paragraph, Bill.
Sponsorship,
and then we were going into something else. Thank you. I know what I want to talk about, too. How many of you are dating here? Good, you're cute. Nobody else in this whole room dates? Are you married? Thank you, Claire. God, have you all had it cut off? Don't you guys have any fun down here in the desert? I wanted to move down here. I'm not sure whether you're ready for me or not. All right, let's put it this way. Are you all hoping to? Oh, all right. Then I've got it better. Okay, okay. Yeah, we've got a lot of that going on up in West L.A. Oh, we got a lot of it. Oh, do we have a lot of it. And it seems like the minute we get sober, we feel that the answer... Just like the doctors feel that what causes alcoholism, to quote a friend of mine, is the lack of Librium, the shortage of Librium in our system, and they want to load us up on that, we always seem to think it's a mate. I imagine that may have snuck into your thinking, is that now that I'm sober, will I ever get again? Or will I, no, remember how, or... And then we're just sure, well, if I'm sober, if I've done this wonderful thing of staying sober like we did it, this means then I should be rewarded with a person of whatever sex we're inclined for. Now, that takes care of everybody, you see. This is where you kill yourself again. This is another one of those things that a sponsor's going to help you on. They're going to tell you, and probably have down here, there's got to be some old-timers that'll lay an end to you kids, just like these two sitting here and this one. Oh, I don't know about that one, but these two. that are going to tell you guys to not get emotionally involved for the first year. Has anybody heard that remark, that stupid remark? Doesn't seem very fair, does it? I mean, my God, you're wasting all this good time. The juices are rising. You know, you're going to be 24 in a few minutes, you know. It's going to be over with. You won't be able to by 26, you know. I want to point out to you that AA has nothing against intercourse. I have never found a line in that book that says it is a no-no. If you are capable, with a little bit of sobriety, to go participate in it, come on in, darling. I miss you from last week. You've been out in the alley so much, you can just tell. Identification, right? If you're capable of that in your early years of sobriety, your early months of sobriety, nobody's going to object to it if you can treat it like brushing your teeth. This is very European, though. Most of us can't participate. We're all sitting here in America, and I've lived abroad, and they do treat it like brushing your teeth. And go on about their business, forget about it. But you see, there's a very strange thing that happens with us. The immoral riffraff of the world. The low man on the totem pole is the alcoholic in any ward. And here we are. We have done everything in the world stoned out of our gourds. I mentioned to you last week that a girl would come to me and say, I wouldn't have done that if I hadn't been drinking. And I said, oh, BS, you did. You drank so you could do it. Remember that? Now, what happens with us is you are walking in here and you don't know you any more than I knew me. And it's going to take quite a few years to get acquainted with the person whose body you're living in. I can't think of anything more intimate than me living inside this body, washing and taking care of it. I thought I knew me every which way but Sunday. Unfortunately, we do not. We only know the one we lied to ourselves and told us we were. And one of the great facts that I can't change for you guys, sorry about it, but you don't have to dwell on it this year if you don't want to, you can throw it out, is that you scratch the immoral surface of an alcoholic, and in underneath you're going to find a goddamn Puritan. Now this is why your sponsor and the group suggest to you lovingly, please don't get emotionally involved. You can't just go out and knock it off and come back and forget about it. It's going to nag on you. Remember the two people we were talking about last week, those of you that were here? The one is going to get you for doing it. You wanted to, and he says, that's dirty. You're not married. And I don't know where we get these things from, whether it's our American culture or the first 6 years of our lives, whoever we were living with or at school or someplace, but we have an ingrained sense of morality in there from childhood. Now, what do we do then? Because we're healthy, we're human beings, and we're certainly self-willed, and we're not going to let the nights and days go by forever. So then we come to our sponsor and we say, I'm in love. Yeah. Isn't that wonderful? Now, we don't know. We can't remember to take the trash out on Thursday nights for the guy to pick it up, but we're in love. We have no concept of self-love. We have no concept of how to even be a friend to somebody, but we're in love. The old saw on that, of course, is heat. We're in heat. I don't like that because I think we're really much deeper than that. So what it is that if we can clean it up and claim its love, then I can give myself permission to go out with that good-looking dude and do whatever it is I wanted to do in the first place. And I can come back and present it to you. Now, there's one thing wrong with this. One big thing, other than many little ones, is that when you get yourself involved like this in your first couple of years, I'm not one of those that tells you the first year, because I know it's not going to hold water for the first year anyway. I suggest to you wait a little while longer and wait and see when God says you should. And he doesn't mind you practicing. Don't worry, you'll get practice in. He gives you little bits to practice on along the line. It isn't that you just stay pristine and then get into a marriage or something horrible. No, he's not going to let you blow the right person he's going to send to you. That he's going to send. You're not going to get to pick him out. That he's going to send to you. With all the selfish, self-will, character defects we've got over here. So he's going to let you practice along on some flakes that it won't matter. Before you get to the one that he says, this is it, and you're going to share, and this is where you're going to stand still and grow. So you do get the practice in. This is a program of practice. Now, what happens is that the miracle of this program is this dramatic change that takes place in these first months and years, the very first ones. These are the gassiest. Well, not necessarily. I like where I am, too. Every year I liked where I was. But this is where the greatest change takes place. It can happen in, well, it can happen in 2 months that you look different. You feel different. People that knew you don't know you anymore because you don't look like the same person. This change is so violent. So then if you are fighting your sponsor and your group and everybody else on protecting your right to be with this flake you've picked out. And let me remind you, one of the best spiritual statements I have ever been credited with is flakes attract flakes. And that's true. That's a deep, deep message. Now you're going to break your butt getting united, hooked up with this one. I'm going to tell you, the reason why it's not going to work is because by next year, something were to separate the two of you, and you grow, and this dodo wanders into your life again 1 year later, you wouldn't spit on him to put out the fire. You would no more be attracted to him because you're not living in the same level of illness anymore. You're beginning to like yourself a little bit. You want a little nicer girl. You want a nicer girl, a nicer, you know, boy. Whatever it is. You begin to treat yourself better. You begin to trust God a little more and decide, well, hey, God, he got me the place to live, and he got me the job, and he got me wheels. He's done a pretty good job. I wasn't going to be able to get these nearly as good. He may be able to pick out a better person for me, too. But you see, we all are grabbers. We grab, grab, grab because I may not ever have one. And we go to the conventions. And everybody, if they had time to get to me in there, but the ones that do know me always come up at any big gathering. So that can be maybe a couple of hundred or so come up to me during the weekend to tell me that they know that everybody at that convention, everybody came in couples, and they're the only one that's alone. It's so sad. Now, that's what I wanted to say about love. Am I going to be able to talk a minute about God? Because I want to get into questions tonight, kids. What time does this thing stop? This looks so silly. It looks to me like it says 1 o'clock in the morning. Which way does it go? That way? I haven't got any eyes since I suddenly got old. Bill, what time is it? This is so pretty. It's 8:45. Well, then no wonder I can't read it. His clock is wrong. It doesn't say 8:45 any direction I hold it. All right, then you go like this or stand up or cough or something. Let's talk a little bit about our higher power. Has anybody in here got one? Big deal. How'd you find it? Where'd you look? How'd you get it? You must have had one and brought him in with you. No? I wasn't that lucky. I had gotten rid of my higher power out there when he kept screwing around and giving everybody else what they prayed for to give me what I wanted. So I just... Huh? Well, that's right, Diane, but you were special. You were living up there then. You got mine and he's gassy and he put up with you. He likes people like you and me. Well, remember me telling you about how sick I was. And some of you are going to experience how sick you are. The longer you're sober here, a few more weeks, and you're going to begin to think, gee, something's really wrong. That's where step two comes in, by the way. But you know, you're going to be as sick as I was, maybe, where you can't memorize anything, you can't remember anything, and you have no concept of a higher power except the one that they slathered you with when you were a kid. It obviously didn't work, or it was a punishing God. I know so many kids that come into AA and they've got Hitler for God. Gee. You know, I wouldn't even mail him a postcard, much less talk to him all the time. And they kept telling me, you got to have a God, Gene. When I came in, when Eileen did, where people weren't very nice to you. They didn't put up with you like we all put up with you guys. You know, they said, well, if you don't like it, leave. You know, don't argue with me. Go do it. Shut up. Sit down. You know, listen. You don't know anything. I'll talk and you listen. Use your ears in direct proportion to your mouth. All kinds of nice things like that. But they kept telling me, Gene, you've got to have a God. first thing they started with, they were real cute. They kept patting me on the head and saying, you've got to have faith. And I thought, yeah, I can see I'm going to need it. And I didn't have any idea where faith came from. And they just keep patting me on the head, you know, as I go through these trials. And like I said last week, I couldn't pay the rent from month to month. And they'd say, it'll be all right, just stay in the now. And then they go home to their big home in Beverly Hills. And I'm standing there, you know, going home trying to figure out what it was. And of course, by the now, when the now became the first of the month, I got it always sent it to me, just enough. So I had to have faith. And finally, I got mad at some of these old boys, stomped my little foot at them and tossed my red hair and said, well, that's just fine, but I don't know what credit card to use to go get it, you know. I was really PO'd. And I thought, they have never given me an answer on what faith is. If I ever stay alive long enough to be asked to help anybody, and they ever ask me that question, by God, I'm going to have an answer for them. And I prayed over it, and I prayed over it, and I went on to my AA, and I didn't think I had any faith. But I was staying alive, and I was staying comfortable part of the time. And I was busy going to meetings every night and every day. And one time, I got to thinking about that, and I thought, oh, shoot, I know what the answer is to that now, and I hadn't been giving it any thought all along. And let me submit for your consideration. This is why the newcomer doesn't have any. Don't worry about it. You'll have a little bit in your first week, but you won't recognize it as that. But faith is the experiences, the total of the experiences you've had here in AA. How many of you in your first year already have had so many crises that you are positive your higher power is not going to pull you through, that the group couldn't, your sponsor couldn't, you were going to go under? And when we look back in retrospection, and we see all the near misses that we should have been over the cliff. Over and over again, I knew it was going to happen. And each time, this unseen thing that I didn't know what it looked like or anything about it had pulled me through. And that evidence of that experience is faith. And the more evidence we pile up by going to our meetings and sharing with each other and helping each other, and try to love when we don't feel loving, all that begins to turn into something much better than faith. And it's called trust. And trust is quite a step up from faith. I remember an old boy said one time, and I thought it was kind of cute, he says, well, I have faith that the Russians are over there, but I don't trust them. And I thought, yeah, there's kind of a difference, isn't there? But you see, trust is the next step up on the ladder. And then, of course, the best one of all is what those of us that have been here for a while are working on, is understanding, knowing. And you see, this comes about because of our own personal experiences. Jimmy came over last night and we talked a little bit. Some of the other kids have been over while I've been down here. We've shared. And this God thing... You could hold a machine gun to my head tonight and say, Jeannie, you will have to decide that there is no God, that there's no divine power. And I'll have to say, well, I'm sorry, you'll have to blow my head off. There wouldn't be anything dramatic about it or anything. It's just that it's truth for me today. And it certainly wasn't when I came to you. And the reason it's truth for me, where it may not be for Jim, who I was talking with last night, but it's beginning to be, I think, for him, is I have my own personal proof, mine, that nobody can take away from me, from the accruement of all those experiences of miracles that have taken place inside of me and changing this person to be whatever I am today and what I'll be in the future. And then all of the material miracles where I've nearly gone down the tube and it's never happened. And I've always learned something magnificent from every negative experience I've ever had. And when you get yours and it starts to come, and it is so exciting. That's another reason you got to have a sponsor. You got to call somebody up to tell them. You got to tell them about this marvelous thing that happened when you were standing there brushing your teeth, looking in the mirror, and all of a sudden, crash, and it dawns on you, and you get this feeling all over you. And don't let them tell you, well, it's just the educational variety. Yes, it's the educational variety. We got to have the educational around with it. That's what we're doing here tonight, is trying to learn from each other, trying to share what little we know. But these experiences, these gassy ones are going to come. The best way I can describe it, kids, and it's not very nice, but you'll sure know what I mean. It's like having a Roman candle shoved up your butt and lit. You just take off, and then you hit a plateau. And then you hang there for a while, and God, is it comfortable. Isn't it comfortable when we hit one of those plateaus? And then, oh, God, I think maybe I've learned it all. You know, now I can rest for a little bit, and I know something that the rest of them don't know, and it's mine. And then you stay there in the plateau for a little while, and all of a sudden, here comes that thing. Nothing tragic going on necessarily in your life. No loss of job or anything, but all of a sudden, there's that thing that we've known all our lives, that inside itch we can't scratch. You know that? And it starts to get itchy. And we start to be uncomfortable, and then we start to feel emotionally blackmailed, and nobody's doing anything to us. And we begin to feel really, and in my case, I got to the phone immediately and called my sponsor and described dramatically everything that was happening, and he just hollered his head off at the other end of the line. He thought it was the funniest thing in the world. And I didn't like his reaction when I thought I was dying. I thought that was pretty crass, but then I didn't like my sponsor most of the time anyway. He told me the truth. And through the years, I stopped calling him. Finally, he says, well, you haven't called me with any of those anymore. I says, well, that's because I know what it is now, and you always laughed. His main line was, oh, isn't that wonderful? You're getting ready to be shoved into another plateau of understanding. And the old fart was right. That's what it was. And so I began to recognize the symptoms, and the minute I recognized the symptoms, I didn't get all hysterical about it again. I didn't think it was the end of the world again. And so I would go on from there. And I'd wait till I got through it, turn to my higher power, work my steps at a different level, keep going, keep pushing forward, expanding my thinking. It's very much like math. We do 2 + 2 today. Tomorrow we do 2 + 3. And we learned how to do 2 today, so tomorrow we'll know how to do 3. We don't know it, but we'll expand what we have, and we utilize what we've already learned. My head was so ill that the concept of God was utterly impossible to me when I came in, and I had worked in films, and I could remember that logo on the RKO thing was the globe with the thing sticking up on top and the electricity coming out, the little telegraph thing or something. And I came in and I muttered around in AA up in LA for quite a long time. God, 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 God. Now, if you were in a room with me, that didn't look like I was real swift. But it was the best I could do. Just over and over again, God, 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 God. Finally, I had developed to another level, even there, even though there were baby steps, and I had remembered, I still couldn't use the word God and mean it and understand anything connected with it, but I remember that I had always liked the slogan, let George do it. You know, we're so lazy, we'd always rather have somebody else do it. Let George do it. And so for about 6 years all over AA in our area, everybody knew Jeannie's higher power, George, because I talked a lot about George. And I had no concept mentally. I have never been able to accept the concept of God as Charlton Heston in drag. You know, we've seen him in robes in every movie. And that, I just knew that God could not be a human figure and take care of all of us. He would have his hands filled with me, and yet he was obviously taking care of you too. So it had to be much more divine beyond the limitations of my human thinking. And along the line, I ran into people that told me something that I'm passing on with new people, because it will be new to you. Is that God is very similar to, let's say we have a windstorm down here which comes up real fast, and you can hear it, and you step out on the porch, and you can see the evidence of it all around, and you can feel the wind on you. But I assure you, you cannot grab a camera and go out and photograph the wind, or grab a handful, bring it in real fast, and put it in the refrigerator and keep it. And so for a long time, from George, I went into the wind for God. So it doesn't matter much, because I've got a gassy higher power today, and he is in flux too. You see, I'm going to be here another 20 years, God. It may change again, 12 times or 20 times. I don't know, but it's a growing thing. But the feeling is always there, and the help. I tell the kids at my house, gee, you know how you got off real fast on drugs. Why don't you guys just switch it around and pretend you've got an atomic energy plant right outside your own apartment window, and that's what you plug into every morning, and you don't even have to think about it. You wouldn't understand the theory of hydrogen or whatever the hell it works on anyway. Just plug